Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. We have two items on our agenda today, and I will start by opening a work session on House Bill 2543. Christine.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2543, with the A8 amendment, would remove the allocation of $19 million from the Common School Fund as an investment, and so it would leave the program still with a funding requirement. This amendment, as different from the version that came over from the House, would change the criteria for sorting for real market values, as well as allow the Department of Revenue to check the participants' qualifications every 2 years. Neither of these amendments would change the revenue impacts or the fiscal impacts. There's a fiscal impact of $125,000 for the Department of Revenue to reprogram the computers to change the interest rates related to the program. But there are no changes to the revenue impact of the measure. So this amendment would, and measure would tighten down a lot of aspects of the senior property tax deferral program that we've already gone over, and it would be similar to the version that came from the House.
Okay. Committee, this is we're going to have to go through a little bit of a process because we adopted an amendment earlier to actually provide a funding mechanism to keep the program afloat. And that funding mechanism now has needs some further work. So we don't want to hold up the policy bill. So Senator Morris and I will go through a little process to get this bill in shape, which is very similar to the House pass measure. The House did excellent work on this with some tweaks that we have made in this committee to make it an even better bill. But the version that we will take action on today will be strictly a policy bill, and the funding issue has not gone away, but it will be dealt with in another forum. So Senator Morris, do you have anything to say?
I have a motion, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2543A was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Senator Morris moves that we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2543A was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move we delete the dash A6 amendments to House Bill 2543.
Senator Morris has moved that we delete the dash A6 amendment to House Bill 2543. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move we adopt the A8 amendments to House Bill 2543.
Senator Morris moves that we adopt the dash A8 amendments to House Bill 2543. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Okay, Senator Morris, I think we can use a final motion here.
Madam Chair, I move
House Bill
2543 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2543 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Till.
Okay, Madam Chair, I just have a question for clarification. I think it's still Section 7. Has to do with the liens. And since we've subordinated ourselves, you know, we're kind of back in line on this, what happens when there's a somebody who's on the program who has a reverse mortgage, and so that the amount that we would be able to move on in case there was a foreclosure or something gets smaller and smaller and smaller. How does that? Do we pay attention to that? Does it affect us? Are we paying attention?
First of all, Senator Telfer, anyone who gets a reverse mortgage would be disqualified from the program immediately.
Oh, okay.
So at the time that the reverse...
Well,
It would be.
Where does it disqualify them in the bill or in the program? Where is they are they disqualified if they get a reverse mortgage? Because it doesn't. It's not factored into their net worth.
Do we have John Phillips? Do you want to come up and see if you can respond to that?
I think he's scurrying to look at it anyway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue, and I'm going to have to just quickly look for that answer. I have it here somewhere. Any amendments?
Take your time.
Well, and I apologize for not coming before with this. Just it dawned on me, you know, there's this wave of marketing going on for reverse mortgages, and so I was just concerned that obviously the collateral decreases, and since we're so far back in line.
Well, and you know, also relevant to that would be a second mortgage, how that would fit in, whether someone on the program would be able to get a second mortgage or
and jump ahead
a line
of
credit and jump ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I have before me the AN Gross version. And in that version, in Section 16, pardon me, there's a provision in Subsection 2 that says a homestead on which the amounts deferred remain outstanding may not be pledged as a security for a reverse mortgage by any person. The intent of that was to prospectively, for anyone in the program, to prevent them from contracting for a reverse mortgage and thereby put in at risk equity in the property for which we have a lien.
Which would also apply to a second mortgage subsequent to them getting into the program.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, that's correct. That's always true. Anytime we're in line, any additional equity financing, second mortgage, third mortgage, anything comes after us. This is a situation where a person wants to go off the program by refinancing. They pay us completely off. They get a reverse mortgage, and then they apply to be on the program again. In that case, we have to accept them under current law. But slowly by slowly, month by month, we're losing equity.
Right. Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Perfect.
Thank you for bringing that up, Senator Telfer, because this is one of the positive things about this bill that I hadn't noticed before. Other questions under discussion here or comments? Okay, we have a motion to send House Bill 2543 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I guess I will carry this bill. Okay, now we will open something, a public hearing, I believe. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2563.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2563 with the date at the -A7 amendment would the original bill extended the sunset on property tax exemptions for food processing equipment for a 2-year period, and the amendment, the A7 amendment, also extends the sunset on property tax exemptions for alternative energy installations for the period from July 1st, 2012 to July 1st, 2018. It changes some of the language to exempt actual alternative energy systems as opposed to only the property to which they are attached. And this has some implications for entities that are already tax exempt, such as schools or government buildings. They would be able to actually receive the exemption on the property itself. So there is an incentive to install the alternative energy system installation. There is an estimated revenue impact to this alternative energy systems exemption as it already stands as $500,000 dollars or $500,000 in 11-13 and $500,000 in 13-15 and a $100,000 shift in both those biennia. And then there's an indeterminate amount of additional exemption that would result from these changes There are a number of projects in line. Beaverton and Gladstone schools are planning on installing 600-kilowatt systems for a assessed value of approximately $3 million that would, on one hand, it would be new installation as a result of this exemption and its availability, but on the other hand, it would also be a property tax expenditure because that value would not ever be subject to property tax if this measure were passed. There are some other projects around Klamath Falls and Pendleton and Lincoln City potentially would be considering the alternative energy system installation as a result of this. There's a fiscal impact statement on this measure of a minimal fiscal impact, and the revenue would be largely indeterminate. The food processing property tax exemption has a $2 million property tax loss, and that's just to extend the existing exemption for two more years into 11-13, and then 13-15. This measure doesn't touch that biennium.
Okay, so we basically have two parts to this bill. One is pertaining to food processors, and the other is pertaining to solar panels. So I think we'll ask Mark Nelson to come up here and very quickly, and Gil, if you want to come up with him. You don't have to, but if you want to, you can. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is, Mark Nelson, representing Northwest Food Processors Association.
He's still learning how to do this.
It's all new. We both appeared before you one other time, so you're getting basically the same material I provided before, which is a copy of the applicable statute as well as a brief little paper. But as I said quickly before, is that this has been a vital tool for us since 2005 for the food processing industry. 3 years prior to 2005, we had a sector that was going basically through the floor. Our sector had declined 15%, our payroll declined 11%. And we were predicting significant job losses. With the passage by this body of this food processing equipment exemption, we have seen a turnaround in the industry in 2008, 2009. We were the only sector that did not lose employment, actually gained employment in the state. Again, I'll emphasize that this is a temporary exemption that expires in 5 years, and we go back on the rolls with the machinery. Very, very helpful to the industry, Madam Chair.
Okay, and by temporary, you're not referring to the sunset. You're referring to how the exemption works.
That's correct. And okay. And as we discussed with the counties last time, we did discuss at your request with them, rather than a four-year extension, the county's AOC preferred that we come together with a variety of different groups over the next 2 years, and therefore you'll see a two-year extension of the exemption.
Gil.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. A little bit of backstory. This indeed was adopted in 2005 to be a temporary measure. The sector that Mark's referring to was very threatened and convinced the counties, our board, that they needed the help. So in spite of the principle we have against this, we pitched in. And we may have been the only public sector folks to do that, but we were successful. This was intended to be over a measurable period of time and then see how it worked and see if the threat still exists to the sector. In 2005, we learned that there were international circumstances at play that were really out of their control, and they needed this boost. So we think that it's appropriate before we have this conversation to have it extend 2 years, but then in the meantime, talk about whether industry still needs this or this kind of exemption or program.
Okay. And for during the next 2 years, it's probably a more realistic environment to have that conversation than right now when we're still trying to dig our way out. So you're comfortable with the 2 years and feel that you can have a good conversation
Chair, I believe so, and we need to include the two state agencies that administer this, revenue and agriculture. Mm-hmm. There's an awkwardness to this because the filing date expires on March 1st, but these amendments extend it, so Mark's clients will be able to go through the process.
Okay. All right, questions from the committee? Right. Thank you very much. Now we have Christina Skillinger, Glenn Montgomery, and Jennifer Williams. Actually, let's take the first two first, and then we'll take Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Glenn Montgomery. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association. I'm here to testify in favor of the House Bill 2563-A7 amendments, which includes clarification on language for the alternative energy device exemption and extends the sunset. This amendment has taken somewhat of a circuitous route. It was in committee on the House side, and there were some concerns with regard to the wordsmithing of the language that we have since remedied and have all stakeholders in support of this, including Associated Oregon Counties, Pacific Power, PGE, and other stakeholders that have been at the table. It is a clarification of the language. The property tax exemption has existed since the late 70s. The fact that a current interpretation has prevented municipal projects from moving forward because of third-party installed systems and the interpretation that those would not enjoy the tax exemption has really created the urgency behind clarifying this language. So what we've done is remedied the language such that schools, other public buildings, churches, nonprofits that often rely on a third-party financed model can enjoy the exemption, as well as those that purchase outright or have a traditional means with which to install these systems. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Let's take our next witness, and then we'll open up for questions.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I'm Christina Skellinger from Girding Eadlin, and we are predominantly a real estate developer, but for the past 4 years, I've been focused on solar development across the United States. For the last 4 years, we've installed a number of systems in Oregon, one at Portland Public Schools, or actually 9 across Portland Public Schools, one at Portland Community College, and we currently have projects with Beaverton School District and Gladstone School District, as was mentioned before. These projects are utilizing the feed-in tariff program and have been negotiated and are ready to go with the understanding that third-party owned systems would be property tax exempt. Past projects have been installed with this understanding, and the interpretation of the statute has recently been changed, which is why we're here today. The ramifications of this exemption not going through is for existing systems, I'm not sure. I know those investors will probably walk away from the state and from those systems because it'll turn the economics, it turns these projects upside down. For the Gladstone and Beaverton projects, they will not move forward. And because we're using the feed-in tariff program, these projects have to be in by October of this year, which means that this exemption and this fix to the language has to be passed this session for these projects to move forward. So we appreciate your support. I'm here to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. And I wanted to make sure you understood that Senator Hass has taken a really important role on getting us this amendment and getting it in good shape for today.
Yes, yeah. We appreciate that.
Are there questions or comments from the committee? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Jennifer Williamson.
Good Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Williamson, here on behalf of Pacific Power. Pacific Power is primarily a rural energy company serving more than 550,000 Oregonians. And we have a large portfolio of renewable energy resources, and we're well on track towards compliance with the state RPS and solar initiative. And I'm here today to express our appreciation for members of the group and Senator Haas for working through this amendment language. And we support the Dash 7 amendments because they are clear in their intent.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee? I see PGE here. If you want to talk, you can, and if you don't, you don't have to. All right, she looks happy.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes our testimony. Is there anybody else who would like to talk? Okay, we'll close public hearing on House Bill 2563. And we will open a work session on House Bill 2563. Senator Morris, we have a Dash A7 amendment. Here you go.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash A7 amendments to House Bill 2563.
Senator Morris has moved the Dash A7 amendment to House Bill 2563. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2563 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2563 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Let's see. Who should we have carry this? Oh, Senator Haas. Senator Haas will carry this. That concludes the business of our committee, and I want to remind members that we have a joint tax credit committee meeting at 4. And until then, and until our next meeting, we are adjourned. And until our next meeting, we are adjourned.